to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, here we go for round three. Are you ready? Welcome to the third and final hour of tonight's live installment, our live episode of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Very interesting show we're having tonight with all of us scattered to the four corners. Bill Rowland is actually in Memphis in studio tonight. He co-hosted with me for the first hour. They're making sure everything runs like a top WLRM, but I'm on the road this week. Keith Alexander on the road in another location for business. I'm here out of town shooting some videos for the Political Cesspool's video project. We'll all be back in Memphis next week, but the show itself isn't missing a beat, of course. We're bringing to you yet another scintillating episode, and all of this behind-the-scenes stuff, well, that's just for us to worry about. You're still getting a quality product. At least I hope you are. I want to thank Bill Rowland again for his service in the first hour. Keith Alexander, who normally hosts with me the first hour, was with the second hour tonight on this topsy-turvy night in the cesspool. Also, Richard Spencer joined us that first hour. Richard Spencer of AlternativeRight.com. He gave a recent speech at Vanderbilt University, made front news here in Nashville. He did, and of course, he is putting together the H.M. Mencken Club meeting in Baltimore, Maryland, coming up just a couple of weeks from now. So if you missed our interview with Richard Spencer during tonight's first hour, be sure to revisit it in the broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And anyway, getting back to what my normal spiel at the top of the hour, welcome back to the show, everybody, as we broadcast to you tonight from the Liberty News Radio Network, going out tonight to the Liberty News affiliates, the AM/FM stations that carry our program across the country, 1380, our flagship in Memphis, WLRM Radio, being one of them. Also, simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Both websites carry our broadcast archives. Don't know if you can hear my baby in the background. I told you I am here on the road doing some video work for the cesspool, and I'm in a hotel tonight. The family came with. I got my wife and child in the room, and she is over there just having a fit.
James, are you taking dollars?
Bill, magically, is this an apparition? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I thought I'd call in. I was enjoying your conversation so much I had to interrupt it.
Well, here we go. I was just there pontificating alone, and then I hear the voice of Bill. I thought I'm so delirious from this trip that I might have been imagining that, but apparently not. You are there.
I'm here indeed. Well, you know, I said earlier, James, I wouldn't want to be in the studio alone, and so I didn't want to leave you alone on the road. But then I found out you got your wife and baby with you, and so, you know, I guess I should just bail out on this call. What do you think?
Well, I maybe. Well, do you have to? You know,
not at all. But you know, I wanted to say, of course, that these road shows are always difficult, and we're looking forward to doing these videos. And I was going to suggest, James, you know, we had talked earlier this week about ratcheting up the show, sort of doing things a little differently. And I, if it's okay with you, I wanted to kind of discuss that a little bit. We had a meeting of minds, a little get together where we discussed the show. And, you know, I want to talk to or ask our listeners, if it's okay with you, what they think of these new ideas. Now, of course, the video, super idea, that's going to be a lot of fun. It's really going to add a new dimension to the website and to the show. But we had also talked about having on as regular guests we've had in the past who have proven to be really popular. And what we're talking about is having these guests on once a month, making them regulars. Do we want to talk about that now, or am I letting the Christmas present, putting the Christmas present under the tree a little too soon?
No. I don't think you are at all. In fact, you know, each and every week we have staff meetings, either on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, just whenever we can all get together in advance of the Saturday night shows. And typically we come together to talk about the outline for the forthcoming program. But as you mentioned earlier this week, we just happened to get together to talk about plans more future in nature in terms of a little an outlook a little more broad in nature. And, you know, what's the old proverb, Bill, to whom much is given, much is expected? Well, much has been given to us. We've certainly been given a reputation. We've certainly been lavished with mainstream media publicity for a number of years now, but never more intensely than that which we've received over the course of the summer. So, you know, as a result, we want to fine-tune our program and rise to the challenge and give everyone, our long-term fans as well as our newer listeners, a program that truly is second to none. Now, I think we're certainly second to none in our field because there's no other show like ours, but we want to be able to have the production quality of Limbaugh and of Hannity and of these people whose audience we want to have. And, no, Bill, by all means, let people in a little bit on that which we discussed.
Well, first of all, we discussed having on, for instance, one of the suggestions was Brother Nathaniel. He comes on with such a dynamic and forthright and powerful message and the report every time he comes on. His discussions are so strong, so straightforward, and certainly making him a regular once-a-month visitor to the political cesspool. Also a representative from the British National Party. And here's the reason for everyone listening out there. This is the value of having a show like this, I think one of the great values. In Great Britain, Nick Griffin, the MP, European Parliament MP, has absolutely no voice in English politics because he is so quarantined by the BBC and by the other national broadcast outlets in Britain. If he goes on the air, it's only so that they can throw insults and smears at him and try to shut him down. This show is one of the only shows which has Nick Griffin on and allows him to speak about his politics, about what he wants to do for Britain, about what the British National Party is doing for Britain. We're not necessarily a mouthpiece for the British National Party, but we give them the opportunity to speak where none of the other British broadcast outlets, the national British broadcast system, will allow him free speech. So we're Radio Free Britain as far as the British National Party is concerned. So a representative once a month from the British National Party to tell us about what's going on in Britain and to allow people in Britain to hear the truth about what is going on in their political system and what the British National Party would like to do about it.
Well, Bill, you're exactly right. And, of course, it's been well documented on the show last week and on our website that we had such an intense crush of listeners for that Nick Griffin appearance that it temporarily disabled Liberty News Radio's ability to administer our stream. That's how many people were tuned in, and Liberty News Radio is a top-flight radio network. I mean, the owner of LNR is noted as one of the top 150 talk show hosts in the country by Talkers Magazine, so this is a very legitimate venue, and to have that many listeners is something that we are very proud of. So to say it went over well in Britain would be an understatement, and you're right, they can hear Nick Griffin be interviewed objectively on any of the venues over there, so he has to come to the Political Festival. He has to come to Memphis.
We
have a reputation.
Guys, we'll be back.
Well,
right
there's art, so we got to take a break apparently. But we'll talk more about the vision for the future of the cesspool on the cusp of our sixth birthday. That exists.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
James Edwards, indeed. Bill Rowland here co-hosting with me this third hour. We're rotating, playing musical chairs with the co-hosts. Bill in the first hour, then Keith, then Bill again. Eddie and Winston have the weekend off, but you know, interestingly, Bill, we should probably talk politics at some point this hour or discuss some sort of issue vaguely resembling a political topic. But one of the things that makes this show so special is our openness with our audience and the I think personal relationship that we share with those in our listenership. Even if perhaps we've never met them before, we certainly want to develop a familiar bond with them, and part of establishing such a rapport is being able to talk about what we talk about behind the scenes. You know, that's one of the things that the video project is certainly going to be doing. And, you know, giving people more access to what life is like, you know, behind the scenes of the cesspool. And that's something that I'm very proud of. I think that's something that makes just another thing that makes the show unique. So that's what we're doing here at the very beginning of this third hour, sharing with you our vision as we continue to move forward, as we continue to ratchet up the work. You know, we're not complacent here in the political cesspool. We don't hang our hats on past laurels. We always seek to further the message and increase the accomplishment. You know, in fact, just this weekend, Bill, did you know about this? This is something that happened this weekend. I know everybody's scattered this week, and the staff isn't in Memphis as we normally would be. But you know, Eddie Miller fielded an interview with a French newspaper. Someone, a reporter, flew all the way in from Paris to do an interview about the show. Of course, I was out of town. Keith was out of town. And so Eddie took it. So, you know, the political cesspool continues to get publicity from, well, everywhere. And so that was something that took place on I believe it was Friday. So hopefully Eddie minded his manners. You never know.
I'm sure Eddie gave them a very enlightening and exciting interview. Knowing Eddie the Bombardier, I'm sure the interview popped and crackled. So that's good though. That's what Eddie does best. You know,
Eddie and I had a nice talk before the meeting, and so we kind of went over what to say and what not to say. But it's great that the show continues to generate such interest, and that Eddie can be a part of it. I mean, certainly it's not my show. This is a show that truly is the sum of all of its parts: the listenership, all of the co-hosts, the staff, and crew. And we're certainly going places. But, Bill, we opened this conversation up just a moment ago. I'd like to conclude it now before we move on to a couple of other things before we run out of time tonight. You know, moving forward, the show continues to receive such great acclaim and attention. So in addition to some of the things you talked about previously, what more can we do to make the show a better product as we move into what will soon be a new year?
Well, as they used to say in the old days, send in your cards and letters. And I would like the political cesspool audience to do is just send us an email saying who are the guests we've had on that have been your favorites, maybe two or three guests that you would like to hear more often. And we will certainly do our best to follow up on that and to make sure that these people get more time on the show.
We can't always
get these people. We can't always get them because they're, of course, busy. But we'll do our best to bring them to you more often. And of course, we're working. Go ahead, Jane.
No, I was just going to say that's an excellent point because, as I said, we like to have an open relationship with our audience. I had a word on the tip of my tongue a moment ago. We like to be interactive with our audience. And so, yes, absolutely. Bill hit something dead center just then. Send in your emails. Favorite guests you would like to have us on more often. Bill made mention of the fact that we'd like to follow a model used by some other radio programs. We'll continue to interview guests who are making news at the time, but perhaps have a rotating roster of maybe a dozen guests that we have on quite regularly. And your input would be needed in that.
Exactly. And so, you know, we've had so many guests on over the years that, of course, many of them have kind of faded to the background, not because we don't like them, not because they weren't good guests, but because they've really sort of gotten out of the political realm or have moved on to other things or just haven't really been very active. But there are people now who really have taken hold of the problems that we face and are doing really good work to bring our people out of this desperate situation that we are in. So, you know, we want to have those people come on and encourage us and to give us, you know, to let everyone know what can be done and what is being done so that we don't just discuss problems, we actually take action to correct them.
Well, that's right. So above and beyond your guest selections, be sure to go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, a website that should need no mention. We all know it. But go there and go to the contact page and send me an email. Send Bill an email. Send Eddie or Winston an email. Keith, let us know what we can do to make this show better in your opinion, and I promise you that that'll be taken under serious consideration, and hopefully it'll be something we'll be able to implement. But we're only as good as the audience who listens to us. We're here to serve you. Without you, there is no political cesspool, and so we want to know what more we can be doing, not only to maintain all that has been built, which, you know, quite frankly, there simply is no right-of-center political entity in the United States of America that is generating as much news as this radio program. So by almost any standard of measurement, we are certainly at the cutting edge of the paleoconservative movement, but we still want to find ways to improve what we do. And I'm sure there are ways, and I'm sure there's things we could be doing that we haven't yet jumped on, you know, this video project being one. We're about to rectify that. But get in touch with us and let us know. And, Bill, just one of the many ways we hope to continue to be of service to our valuable listening audience.
Well, the thing is that things are changing so much right now. You know, James, politically we're in a perfect storm right now in this country. The economy is bad. The political system is falling apart in the sense that the Republicans are not really addressing the real problems in this country. The Democrats are trying to shore up the failing support for Barack Obama. This is the perfect time for us to be speaking out about the real problems, about the real issues in this country, which is third world immigration coming into this country, racial preferences for minorities when they don't deserve it, the economy failing because of the subsidies and the giveaways to minorities and deadbeats. All of these things are the real problems. And we can, you talk about Wall Street and the banks and all these other things. The problem is at the street level. It's at the core level of the population of this country. And that is that we're no longer a white majority. This is no longer a country with 90% white. It's 64% white, and the standard of living is dropping. Get the math right, people. That's the reason.
Well, Bill, you actually are touching on something now that I wanted to speak on in this hour anyway, and that is, our ideas, and we may mention this, well, we talk about it every week. Keith and I spent some time discussing this in the second hour. Our ideas are so readily apparent and self-evident and common sense in nature that it's a shock to me that anyone could have an opposing viewpoint on some of the fundamentals that we discuss here on this program. One of them being, of course, you can't have a first world nation with a third world population. America will only maintain its Western culture so long as whites are the dominant majority. And to lose that, it could be nothing but a detriment. And I think people see that. Obviously, what makes us stand out from the crowd is that we're willing to speak openly and honestly about that. But is there an implicit whiteness that's beginning to manifest itself that perhaps wasn't there even last year or in the very near past? I don't know, but I've got a couple of examples that I want to run past you, Bill, when we come back. We'll do that right after this.
Right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Time always flies when we're doing this show. I know. I say it every week during the third hour with about a segment or two left in the program. But it's really true, and I think tonight with everything being so topsy-turvy, it's going by even more quickly. Bill, the question was asked right before our last break. With everything that's going on in Obama's America, with everything that we're saying here on this program fundamentally resonating with the so-called stereotypical white conservative, I mean, even if they're not going to be honest with people in public, surely they're being honest with themselves and saying, a lot of the stuff I'm hearing on the political cesspool, that's just the God's honest truth. So the question was, is an implicit whiteness beginning to manifest itself in a way not seen in recent years. And I bring a couple of examples to your attention very quickly in the form of television ads and commercials. We actually blogged about this one in Nevada. I wrote that the bar for being a racist keeps lower, getting lower and lower all the time. Now we're learning that two more things are racist. First, if you're running against an incumbent who is soft on immigration, illegal immigration, it's racist to point out that fact in your ads. And second, if you're racist enough to bring up immigration in your campaigning, it's even more racist to depict illegal alien immigrants as brown-skinned people sneaking across our border with Mexico. I mean, when your own campaign spokeswoman is going on the radio and calling you a racist, you're obviously one stone-cold racist. And the point I'm making is this. There was a political campaign taking place in Nevada right now, Bill. The challenger to Harry Reid came out with an incredible political campaign ad that you would have thought in recent years would have pushed the limits of polite discourse in American political campaigns, but it really pulls no punches. If you or I, Bill, were commissioned with the charge of coming up with a campaign ad that would really be hard-hitting and take no prisoners on illegal immigration, we could have done no better than to come up with this ad that Harry Reid's challenger has come up with in Nevada. And basically what it does is it talks about immigration and how Harry Reid has always been in favor of illegal immigration, and then it shows the thuggish, it depicts illegal aliens as exactly what they are. First of all, criminals sneaking across into the border under the cloak of darkness. They look thuggish, wearing hoodies, and most importantly, they look like Mexicans, meaning they are brown-skinned. And so it's all very accurate in the depiction of it, but it's truthful in a way that we've not seen, or that I've not seen in a long, long time outside of this radio program. And I think that obviously what the candidate was doing here or is attempting to do is play upon the implicit whiteness that more and more people are beginning to adopt. Do you think I'm way off the reservation, Bill, or what do you make of it? And have you seen
the
commercial?
Not at all. Not at all. And I think also that people on the street, people in the public in general, whites, I mean, are becoming less intimidated by racial accusations and by racial bullying, and are beginning to speak out. You know, I got my hair cut the other day, and the person cutting my hair, out of nowhere, we start talking about the old days and, you know, how things have changed. And she's very frankly discussing things in racial terms with me about how she's afraid to live in Memphis anymore, about how everybody needed to get out. Well, who's she talking about, everybody? Well, she's not talking about the Mexicans and she's not talking about the blacks. She's talking about white people. And this is a very, she doesn't know me. I've never seen her before in my life. But she's speaking very frankly about race. And also, someone I know who is in the banking business, I was discussing with him the problems in Memphis, and he's telling me very frankly that people with money are moving their money outside of the city into whiter areas and into whiter communities. So what's going on is a racial, a velvet revolution among whites, and that is that we're gradually creeping away from the strangulation of racial intimidation, and we're not going to be held hostage anymore by the terms racism and about our own guilt complex about race, or not mine and yours, but I mean collectively white people. So there is something happening out there in the marketplace, let's say, of racial politics, and it's not going to be good for non-whites, because whites are beginning to say, my standard of living isn't improving because of affirmative action. My standard of living isn't improving by living in an enriched multicultural environment. My standard of living is going down. And white people right now are working to change that, first economically, and then afterwards it's going to be socially.
Well, Bill, you know, I don't know what your barber, how your barber would have responded if you would have accused them of being a racist, but you know, hopefully they would have had the courage that so many of our people lack, and they would have been able to counter that and without apology, as we do here. But just to know that they engaged you in this unsolicited conversation about very racial matters, and they were espousing an idea that was implicitly pro-white, you know, all we got to do is just take the implicit and make it explicit to where we can publicly advance our ideas in the same way that the minorities advance that which benefits them, then you got a level playing field, and then I think we're going to have an opportunity to reclaim America's destiny. But you know, did you see these political ads in Nevada that I was mentioning earlier? I know we put them up on the Cesspool site.
I did see those ads, and I think also take a look at the Time magazine for this week. That is the October 10th issue. It's about the dangerous white militias in Ohio and rise of the militias again. This is a hint that the media is scared of what white people think, and that's a good thing.
Well, you know, check them out for yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. The title on the Political Cesspool blog, thepoliticalcesspool.org, Racist Political Ads in Nevada, is the title. And we link to those ads. Listen, I mean, like I said, I don't think it could have been any more in your face, but you know, in a very honest way, not in a sensational way or not in a way that was just there to offend, but it really truly depicts the nature of illegal immigration in a way that we all see it. Now, I got another example for you, Bill. You know, again, implicit whiteness. Is there an implicit whiteness that candidates and even corporations are seeking to tap into now? We haven't put this up on the Political Cesspool blog yet, but if you go to Jeep's website, I'm talking about Jeep, Jeep Grand Cherokee, Jeep, the car manufacturer, they have come out with a car advertisement that's almost fascist in its aesthetic. It's not that we're fascists here, but I'm just saying, it comes across as very militant. And very much pro-American, and when I say pro-American, I mean not in the creedal sense, very much a pro-traditional American. And it talks about, you know, America used to be a strong country. America used to build things, and it has almost this cadence in the background, this military drumbeat, and it shows nothing but whites working on the assembly lines, working in factories, you know, sweating out a day's work in the field. And it says, you know, you're the real Americans, and we've built a car for you. I'm just kind of paraphrasing what I can remember, but we've got to get this up on the site. And this is a major international car manufacturer that's coming up with something like this. So it's very similar, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, to the implicit whiteness depicted in this Nevada political ad. So I'm hoping that we start seeing more of that, and then that can be cultivated into something more public in nature. But do you have any other examples, Bill, of what I'm talking about here?
Well, I think your example of the Jeep ad is a good one. I've seen that ad. I would keep in mind, though, that that Dodge has hired a large number. Well, the Dodge has blacks in very high positions now. Affirmative Action hired one of them, an African, and so there's sort of a segregation of automobile lines now in terms of marketing. And so I think you'll see that Dodge is going to be more heavily marketed and promoted towards blacks and minorities. That's a guess, but I think that's what you're going to see. So the automobile manufacturers are beginning to realize that they have to be very careful about how they market their products, that they want to make sure they're hitting the right note with their core market, because they want brand loyalty to take over, and they don't want to have to compete for the same customers every 3 or 4 years. So they want to keep the Jeep. Believe me, the executives at Chrysler know who buys Jeeps, and they want that to be a generational product going on generation after generation. And the same is true of all the car makers.
Well, you know, I'm not suggesting here, and I'm sure you're not either, that everybody in the Cesspool audience go out and buy I guess if you had to buy a car, Jeep is just as good as another one. But based upon this ad, I would certainly buy one. I'm prompted to buy one. But I'm sure if asked or put on the spot, Jeep would apologize. I'm not saying they're the second coming of Henry Ford, but we are starting to see things that we haven't seen before. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back to wrap up the show.
We'll be back right after these messages.
We got to get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, implicit whiteness, that's been the topic of the discussion for the last couple of segments. Hard to believe we're now in our final segment of the evening. We'll all be back in Memphis next week, though. So it's been fun tonight. It's been nice and experimental, and we made it through, thanks to Bill Rowland, of course, and the work he's doing from afar tonight. Bill, did we have another example of implicit whiteness to wrap up the show?
I think certainly one of the, and it's not really implicit so much as explicit, has been the change in the political winds just in the last few months. The obvious desperation on the part of the liberals to paint candidates opposing them in the congressional and senatorial elections as being racists and bigots. Virtually all of the candidates up for election are portraying their opponents, their Republican conservative opponents, on a racial basis. They're smearing them on race. And that's an indication right there that white people intend to get out and vote in this election and intend to make some changes. And the liberal Democrats are scared to death of what's coming down the tunnel. And so I think that that is a very explicit expression of race. Meanwhile, another explicit expression of race is the fact that 91% of blacks in the United States still support Obama, still think that he is the greatest president this country's ever had. So there is a racial divide in politics right now that white people are beginning to see that their interests do not always coincide with the interests of minorities. In fact, almost never coincide with the interests of minorities. And white people are going to be voting race, I think, for the first time in these upcoming elections in many, many years. They gave Obama a green light, 2 years ago, and now they've seen what a mistake they've made, and they're beginning to think white again.
Well, you know, Bill, one way to cultivate this instinctive feeling that we're talking about tonight that so many people have, but so few are willing to, at least at the moment, publicly speak out on, and that wasn't always the case, dating back as recently as the 50s and 60s, you know, everyone was explicitly pro-white. Traditional conservatism was a pro-white, you know, paleo-conservatism is what we would call ourselves today, but this was, you know, the norm back in the 50s and 60s. People were outspokenly addressing issues in a similar fashion that we do now. Basically, all we're doing here on this radio program is saying what would have been, you know, a common-sense belief just a couple of short decades ago. And I think one way that we can, a lot of it's gone underground now, that's why we call it implicit whiteness rather than explicit, open whiteness. But I think one way we can cultivate this and get it back infused into the mainstream where it belongs is by fostering a sense of community, making these natural and healthy and sane ideas in vogue again, culturally in vogue, culturally accepted. There's many ways we can do this, but we've got to foster a sense of community. We've got to work together, those of us who are on the front lines. We've got to support one another. You know, we've been supported. This radio program has been supported by many great individuals, many great leaders, obviously our listenership, but organizations of the right, and that needs to be reciprocated. There are very few people who are willing to stand up and take the licks that we're subjected to. But there are more than just us. And, Bill, I'd like for you to just kind of run down the list of other organizations that are out there that are deserving of our audience's support, starting with the Council of Conservative Citizens, obviously.
Well, the Council of Conservative Citizens is the longest-serving pro-white organization in existence. It's going into 20 years now. And with a dedicated leadership and membership cadre, absolutely worthwhile. The membership dues are very small, considering the work that council members do for our people on so many different levels, from private schools all the way up to bringing issues into the political realm. But this is one of the most worthwhile organizations anyone can belong to. And, of course, there are our Southern Heritage organizations for those specific issues. I won't mention any by name only because, you know, some people will qualify and some people won't for certain groups. But you know, the thing is that certainly the council tops my list, and any organization, community organizations, get involved in the Tea Parties. Mainly get involved in the Tea Parties to keep them on message. You know, the Tea Party message has been drifting because of really Republican upstarts like Sarah Palin and Dick Armey, who stepped in and said, by the way, we're the king and queen of the Tea Parties. Nobody informed you, but we've just told you, so we're in charge now. And they need to be kicked off the podium. They need to be kicked back down into the audience because they are not the Tea Party. I recommend, most of all, get involved with the Tea Party, show up at some of the demonstrations, and put the Tea Party message back on track. It was the most powerful affront to white racial reverses in my lifetime. And one of the most important things is to keep it majority white, to keep it focused, to say we are the real Americans, and we're going to stand up and fight for our rights.
Well, Bill, you know, we've been on the Tea Parties pretty hard, and for good reason. I mean, you have this, well, my goodness, we've talked about it 100 times. If we've talked about it once. You've got this incredible opportunity to really make a powerful difference and get some change enacted within a single election cycle. Opportunities like that don't often present themselves, and the Tea Party seems to be doing everything they can to make sure that they don't capitalize on this gift that's been given. And so you're right. You know, the audience of this show should get in there to make sure that they keep it between the ditches. But the Tea Party, the Council of Conservative Citizens. Anytime you start listing organizations of merit, you always forget one. But European Americans United, American Third Position. There's great publications and academic organizations, the Occidental Quarterly, VDARE, Alternative Right. European Americans United, I don't know if I mentioned them, but, you know, there are a few, and we link to most of them on our site, and they work well with us, and we work well with them. I think we must have pioneered the idea of cooperation, Bill. You know, for so long, this movement has been plagued by personality conflict. Well, I guess it's true of any movement. It's just human nature. But, you know, really works well with everyone, and we've become very well respected, but we certainly want these groups who have, you know, who do share scars with us and who have stood the test of time to be supported as well. It's a community.
Well, James, let me emphasize something here. I'm not saying that the Tea Parties are on the right track. I'm saying that they're salvageable, and it's going to take really dedicated people who recognize the racial dimension of this struggle to get involved with the Tea Party. Get them back on track, because I'll guarantee you that most of the people in the Tea Parties would agree with what we say if they heard it in clear, concise, and comprehensive terms. And the people who have taken over the Tea Party, they're just trying to shill votes. And they are no good for you, no good for me, no good for the white majority in this country. They're just shilling votes. The Sarah Palins, the Dick Armies, and the rest of them, they're just out there with a medicine show to get votes. And what I'm saying is, it's salvageable. It can still be salvaged. Get involved and put it back on the right track.
Bill, you said it quite eloquently and quite appropriately. You know, and these people certainly don't speak for traditional conservatism or traditional Americana, as I believe that we do. But you said something that I've said many times before. Those 300,000 people at the Glenn Beck rally, I do believe, would fundamentally subscribe to this message. And I think it's worth repeating, and that's why I do repeat it, is that I don't think our message is a fringe message. I think our message is a very practical message, and a message that is so obvious in nature that you'd have to be a fool to argue against it. And,
you know, James, it's a message that is starting in the head, it's moving to the heart, and it will reach out with the hand. And that's the thing. Yeah. People are getting the message. They're thinking about it. They're moving it into their hearts, and they're saying they believe it. And they're gonna. And it's going to end up being an action of their hands and of their feet and of their mouths. It's going to come out. It's going to spill out because it's the truth. And you're exactly right.
Well, we're going to propagate that message, Bill, as we have for 6 years, each and every week here on the Political Cesspool. Another show now nearing completion, and we'll put it behind us and move on to the next one. If you haven't bought Racism Schmacism yet, Gotta have it. Now, that's a book you need to take to the tea parties. They read that and follow.
Absolutely.
They read that and follow the prescription that I lay out, you'll see a different tea party. But the reason I bring it up, well, because we need the support, first of all. The proceeds of each sale benefit the show. But I just got a great new review from the great journal American Renaissance, our good friend Jared Taylor. The October 2010 edition. Great review of Racism and Schmacism in it by Amren. Check that out on our homepage as well. I told you I would tell you more about it this hour, but we just had too much to cover. So you can read about it for yourself at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And Bill, thanks so much for your service tonight, coming back for an encore. You know, you did a two a day. This is like a baseball matinee. You did two shows in one night. But I appreciate it, and Keith as well. We're out of time, everybody, but we'll see you next week when we're all back home in Memphis. Good night, everybody. We love you.
To make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.